Let's have a show of hands. How many of you have taken a family road trip? Maybe you remember being crammed into the station wagon, being annoyed by your brother and or sister, dad telling everybody to cut it out, and mom wondering if dad took a wrong turn. There was fast food, sing-alongs, car sickness, car trouble, and a whole bunch of stories to tell when you got back home. While the two-week road trip is pretty much in the past and we've got smartphones and headphones to keep us busy, people are still hitting the roads today. In fact, a survey last year showed that road trips made up 39% of vacations taken by U.S. travelers in 2016. It's up from 17% the previous year. So how did the road trip evolve to what we have today? Rich Rate is an advertising copywriter from Menominee Falls and the author of Don't Make Me Pull Over, An Informal History of the Family Road Trip. Rich, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks, Rob. Pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me on.
Well, you wrote about the history of the road trip and about your own family's road trips, and I want to get this out there right away. Your dad did, in fact, use the infamous line, "Don't make me pull over."
Oh, all the time. Are you kidding? I had two teenage brothers with me in the back seat, and we caused plenty of problems back there. So he would always, you know, reach that big dad hand over the front seat and try to grab the neck of whoever was stirring up the most trouble. But of course, we knew it was an empty threat because we knew he wasn't about to pull over at any point. My dad was one of those guys, I think like many fathers, who was all about making time on the road, right? He wanted to get to whatever that day's destination was as quickly as humanly possible. So he wasn't about to pull over no matter, you know, what trouble we were getting into in the bag.
Yeah, I was just reading the bit where he wouldn't pull over even if the needle was on E because he was pretty sure there was another 39 miles worth in there.
Yeah, he was absolutely convinced that, you know, automotive engineers kept a reserve of 40 miles worth of gasoline once that low fuel light came on. And I can't tell you, Rob, how many times that got us into, you know, problems out on the highways, especially with a notorious chain of restaurants and kind of snack stands in the South called Stuckey's. Because the thing about Stuckey's was they had about 50 billboards for every location. And of course, and they also often offered gas. So they would always advertise, you know, great food, great gas at the next Stuckey's. Well, the only problem was in the late 70s, all the Stuckey's started going out of business because they were, you know, kind of victims of the rise of the fast food chains, the McDonald's and the Wendy's and their drive-through windows. But the problem is when the locations closed, those billboards, of course, would remain up along the highways. So, you know, we'd hit E, no problem. We'd see the billboard for the Stuckey sign, and we'd be following all the billboards to get to that location. The only problem was, of course, when we got to that location, it was closed. It was all boarded up. And so, we often found ourselves in dire straits.
Now, bigger picture, you clearly are nostalgic. You have a very soft spot in your heart for that 1970s-style family road trip in the car.
Absolutely. You know, and it was because it was all about the shared experience back then. It was about making discoveries together as a family. And it wasn't just the good things either. It was the challenges and adversity that you would face along the way. You know, I often say in the book that setting off on a road trip in the 1970s was a lot more like setting off on a great adventure into the wild frontier. There wasn't as much urban sprawl, so the distances between cities felt much greater. There weren't as many exits with service stations that you could find help. And, you know, of course, if you got a flat tire or broke down on the road, help wasn't just a mobile phone call away. You know, your dad was going to have to go and hitchhike to the nearest exit or somehow, you know, somebody in the car would have to know something about how to fix whatever went wrong with the car.
Rich Rate is with us. His new book is Don't Make Me Pull Over, An Informal History of the Family Road Trip. Well, this was kind of a unique moment in time. And Rich, you write that we take for granted these superhighways that we have and all the services, the availability of gas and lodging and food along the way. Talk about how that all came to be.
Yeah, you know, that was one of the most surprising things to me in doing the initial research for this book was finding out how young America's interstate highway system really is. I mean, President Dwight D. Eisenhower signed legislation to begin construction of the interstates in 1956. And of course, it took America basically 2.5 decades to actually build those interstates. So even while we were out traveling the highways and the interstates of the 1970s with my family, they were still building them. So, you know, and you also consider the list of, you know, just a short list of the things that have been around longer than America's interstate highway system. Color TVs, barcodes, microwave ovens. Queen Elizabeth has been Queen of England longer than America has had its interstate highways. So it's really a young phenomenon. But the interstates had such a profound impact on America. They really changed America in so many ways because they made America, an enormously large country, almost overnight so much smaller. Because once the interstates were constructed, all these destinations and all these places that people wanted to visit and could once only read about in newspapers and magazines, suddenly they could travel there given ownership of a car, a few days off, and a few dollars for gasoline. So it was a fundamental transformation of America.
I was just out at the Henry Ford Museum near Detroit last week, and they've got this great exhibit of the earliest motor hotels, motels, and these little shacks that you could use instead of the tent. Yeah. Talk about how we went from, you know, tent carring to hotels.
Yeah, and I just got to say, the Henry Ford is just one of my favorite places on Earth. It's something that we discovered, my family and I have discovered just in the last five or ten years or so, and we've been back many times. So highly recommend that place. And, of course, as part of their exhibits, they have a perfectly preserved Holiday Inn motel room, just like you would have found it, like in the 1960s, right? So, you know, the evolution of how we got to motels, basically during the 1920s and 30s, there was kind of a travel boom. People would set out in their cars and basically they would just pull over to the side of the road and camp wherever they found a small clearing or a pleasant spot to stop and spend the evening. Oftentimes they just pull a tent out of the trunk or whatever or sleep in the car. It really wasn't until a man by the name of Charles Kemmons Wilson in the early 1950s set off on his own family road trip with his own six kids and his wife. At that point, Kemmons Wilson had already made millions of dollars as the owner of movie chains and getting into the construction business. But he set off from Memphis to travel to D.C. with his six kids and wife. And he was a man I think my father would have gotten along with. He didn't want to pay the expensive rates charged at downtown hotels. So he was out staying at these little tourist courts, which were basically sets of shacks set up for travelers to stay at. And he found the conditions absolutely deplorable. You know, they were kind of seedy. They attracted a seedy crowd. They weren't a proper place for nice middle-class families to spend an evening. And what's worse, he was charged a surcharge for every single one of his six kids, which cost him more than just the flat fee for the room itself. So he was so shocked and horrified by these conditions that when he got home back to Memphis, he vowed to start his own motel chain that would cater to the needs of family and offer nice basic amenities like a swimming pool and, nice beds and color TVs and air conditioning. And, of course, that chain became known as Holiday Inn.
Those things were kind of preconditions for that 70s road trip your family made. And you write at the end, we've lost a lot of that. What is it that kind of didn't completely kill, but put a damper on that long-term family car trip?
Yeah, well, as you pointed out, it seems like millennials and other people really are rediscovering the practical benefits of road travel these days, right? I mean, airfares have gone up significantly in price lately. There's all these unexpected delays and cancellations. You have to get to the airport hours in advance of your flight, especially if you're checking bags. So people are coming back to the road trip once again. But unfortunately, you know, there's also been this rise of technology. And now, especially with personal electronics, everybody has, you know, an iPad where they put on their own headphones and watch their own movies, or they have a smartphone and they're texting with their friends, especially the kids in the back seat. And, you know, mom might be in the passenger seat with her own pair of headphones on and listening to an audiobook. So even though we're getting back to these road trips and we're in our car and we're as close as we ever were, in many ways, we're kind of off in our own little worlds. So, you know, I think people just have to take that extra effort to also remember that road trips and what made them so magical, it's really about that shared experience and discovering things together and interacting with each other while you travel.
We're talking about the family road trip with Rich Rattay of Menominee Falls. He's the author of Don't Make Me Pull Over, an informal history of the family road trip. And we want to hear from you. Have you taken a road trip with the family or perhaps survived one? Where'd you go? What kind of vehicle did you take? What did you listen to? Have you done a similar trip with your own kids? Are you planning on taking one this summer? Share a story or a memory with us. Tweet us at Central Time WPR with your story. We'll go right to your calls now. Gretchen is with us in Manitowoc. Gretchen, hi.
Hi. Thanks for the conversation and bringing back all the crazy memories of a family road trip. Can't wait to read the book. But no, it brought back, I'm the youngest of four, and we would always travel to Ohio every summer in a Astro minivan in the early 80s. And my brother and I and my sisters, we would kill each other by the end of the trip. In fact, there was one year where my sister, one of my sisters was on crutches, and my other sister was strangling her as we were going to get gas at one of the way stations.
She wasn't on crutches because of injuries sustained during the road trip, I hope.
No.
Good.
No.
Good. But it sounds like fond memories, Gretchen. Wow. Youngest of four, Rich. Does that ring a bell for you?
Yeah, it sure does. I think we had some similar experiences there. But you know what? Sometimes it's a lot of that adversity and some of the bickering and squabbling that ultimately really brings you together. When I look at my brothers and sister, we're such different people. We're in different careers. But we also have an incredibly strong bond. And I credit that bond to those long hours that we spent, traveling the highways of America together during the 1970s.
Gretchen, thanks a lot for that call. We'll go next to Jen in La Crosse. Jen, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your story, Jen?
So I'm on a road trip with my two kids. We started in Illinois, went out to the Black Hills, and now we're headed back. So I think what you were talking about with kids and devices and stuff like that is kind of true. We try to It seems like it would be cruel to make them kind of tough out the entire road trip. So we do an hour on with the screens and then an hour where we're talking and doing whatever. So.
Okay. I like that. Jen, thanks a lot for that call. And Rich, I got to say, we took a family road trip. This is a couple of years ago with early teenagers to New Orleans. And there were times I was very glad that they had their phones with their own music on it.
Oh, absolutely. As much as a road trip should be about family interaction, we also all need our own little downtime at times, too, right?
Definitely. Thanks, Jen, for that call. And now I think you're a parent yourself now, Rich. Are you able to recreate the highlights of your family road trips?
Well, I learned some things from my dad, and there's some things, that I do a little bit differently as well. As I said earlier, my dad was all about making time, so we would never stop at all these interesting roadside attractions and things along the way, I'm much more prone as the dad these days to make those stops, to take time and discover some of these interesting things that you can find along the way. On a recent road trip that we took out to Yellowstone, we stopped off at the Field of Dreams in Iowa, a few hours to the west in Clear Lake, Iowa. We stopped off at the Surf Ballroom, which is the venue that Buddy Holly and Richie Valens and the Big Bopper last played at before boarding, that fateful airplane and crashing into a nearby cornfield. And we stopped off at some of those traditional places like the Corn Palace and Wall Drug. My dad would have never have done that.
Thanks a lot for that call. Anna is with us now in Beloit. Anna, hi.
Hi.
What'd you want to tell us about?
I just wanted to tell you about the road trip that I'm on right now with my friend Sylvie. We're millennials and we're not just listening to our headphones. So we thought you might think this is interesting.
Well, you're listening to Wisconsin Public Radio, so that's a good step.
Yeah, thanks. I've been road tripping for just about 2 months now, and I'm almost home, but it's been awesome. We've been doing all those same stops that your last caller was just talking about. We've been to, I think, 7 or 8 national parks and lots of funny roadside attractions, but we're not just watching movies or anything. My friend here is crocheting right now, so we're trying to do it the old-fashioned way as much as possible, doing lots of tent camping and all that good stuff.
Fantastic, Anna. Thank you so much, Anna and her friend. I think she had 2 months on this road trip, Rich. That's another, you focus on the family road trip, but that the buddy a road trip, the Thelma and Louise, but hopefully without the tragic ending road trip.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Those buddy road trips can be just as rewarding. And I certainly took my share, especially heading down to spring break, you know, Daytona Beach back in the day with, well, at that time, we probably had six or seven of my buddies in the car.
Thanks a lot for the call, Anna. We are talking about road trips, mostly the family road trip. Rich Rate is with us. He's from Menominee Falls. His new book is Don't Make Me Pull Over, An Informal History of the Family Road Trip. Back to your calls now. Joe is with us in Ontario, Wisconsin. Joe, hi.
Hi. Great topic, fun topic.
Yeah, what'd you want to tell us about, Joe?
Well, after my dad passed away back in the middle 60s, my mother took us on a road trip. We went out from Pennsylvania all the way out to Reno, Nevada. And, you know, as an adult, that was 50 years ago. I could close my eyes, picture all the different stops, the Stuckeys along the way, and riding in the back of the old Chevy station wagon with the back window down, the back seat faced backwards. And, you know, the kids were moving their arms up and down to try to get the truckers to beep their horns. And, you know, it's just something that will always stay with me. And, you know, it was a precious time in my life, and it kind of got me through a really difficult time after my dad passed. So family road trips are really precious.
Joe, thank you so much. What a great story. Thank you so much for sharing that. Rich, these are powerful memories that can stick with people, especially if it's at a particular time in your life like it was for Joe.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, that's part of what I hope people get out of my book is, of course, that it stirs up some fun memories of their own. Of course, you know, I share some of my own family stories and recollections and observations while traveling the highways as a 8 or 10 year old at that time. But I also hope that what people will find interesting in the book is the history about how those experiences came to be and, you know, how we got things like CB radios and AAA triptychs and why our station wagons had fake wood paneling on the side. It's all in there.
Thanks a lot for that call. I won't spoil all your stories from the book, though, Rich. And I want to bring on another caller now. Karen is with us in Washburn County. Karen, hi.
Hi. Well, our family took road trips. They might have not involved the interstate. We lived on a dairy farm, and we could only go for a day because we had to get back home to milk the cows. But we take the country roads, especially in the fall, to view the leaves in the Blue Hills north of Weyerhaeuser. And I can remember my aunt was with us and my mom and dad and my sister and family, and we were raising too much cane in the back seat. And, yeah, my dad threatened, don't make me stop, and he did.
He did? And then what happens next when Dad actually does stop?
We had to get out of the car, and they left us out on a country road for about 20 minutes by ourselves to get things straight and figure out how we had to behave. And then they came back around the corner slowly to pick us up.
And Karen, you learned your lesson and never made trouble again, right?
Yes.
Karen, thank you so much for sharing that. And Rich, for people doing it back then or even doing it now, it doesn't have to be that, you know, multi-week extravaganza.
Oh, absolutely not. And what we're seeing about with road trippers today is that they are taking more of those long weekend style of road trip vacations. And honestly, that's what I do with my own family these days, too. We talked about, you know, going to the Henry Ford Museum. That was just a long weekend for us. Going to places like St. Louis. They have that beautiful city museum down there. Another one of my favorite places to go. So, you know, even a trip of, you know, a couple, 3 days can be just a great getaway.
Rich, as we start to wrap up, do you have a road trip planned or maybe the dream road trip you still want to do?
Well, yeah, I think, you know, especially for somebody who's now written a book about road trips, I would really like to trace the original route of Route 66. Ooh. And also the Lincoln Highway, which I write about extensively in my book as well. Of course, the Lincoln Highway was America's first transcontinental highway.
How long would you need to set aside for a trip like that?
Yeah, I would think if you're driving from Times Square to San Francisco and you want to do it right, I would think, probably 7 days in each direction.
And, Rich, you're not going to find the Stuckeys on Times Square or in San Francisco, I don't think. I mean, I can't confirm that.
Right. Stuckey's does live on there. I think there's about 30 or 35 locations still out there, but not anywhere near the 400 or so locations that there once were.
I was always partial to the Howard Johnson's candy selection. Rich, thanks a lot for joining us today. It's been a lot of fun.
You bet, Rob. Thank you for having me on. I had fun, too.
Rich Rote is an advertising copywriter from Menominee Falls and the author of Don't Make Me Pull Over, an informal history of the family road trip.